Podcast excellence. Back to the Morning Magazine with Cassandra Cassandra and Joel McNally. 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
And we're back inside the pages of the Morning Magazine. Time now is 9:27. I'm Cassandra Cassandra.
And I'm Joel McNally. In the studio with us is Sheriff David Clark, and we've been talking about the Community Justice Resource Center, a program of drug treatment, education, job training, behavior change, and community service that is it's run for about 110 offenders every year. We had conversation with the chief judge of Milwaukee County and the district attorney and some of the organizers of the program about a week ago. Sheriff David Clark has some objections to the program and has said he wants to reform and change the program. On the other side, Ms. Rose was asking some questions about recidivism rate. There is one thing I want to mention about recidivism rate, because you and I have been using different numbers this morning, and I think one of the reasons our numbers are so different, I used the 14% recidivism rate for this program that originally came from a document in your office about people who had not, recidivism was defined as people who had been convicted of the same or a more serious offense within 1 year of completing the program. You said that the three-year rates, there were some varying, much higher recidivism. But when I look at your report here, I see that maybe you're using as recidivism rate arrest rates, because
both are kept by anybody that
But we know there's a difference between somebody being arrested and convicted of something. And you were using like 47%, 50%. When I look at the conviction rates over the past 3 years, that even in this report you just gave me this morning, the recidivism rate you said from 2008 was 21% convictions, 2007, 18% conviction recidivism rate, and back to 2006, a 33% conviction recidivism rate. That's now, you're right, the arrest rates are higher now. There's like a 55% at one point arrest rate, but no one was convicted
Well, that's not true. 33% of that 55%, so it's not 33% of the total, ended up being convicted in that year. But, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Well, what I'm saying is you're using the biggest numbers you can find, and I used the number that I thought came from your office, 14% recidivism rate. That's, in fact, you provided that to the chief judge and other folks about a week ago out at the House of Corrections.
Let's not go back to that, because I thought that I made that clear, that those were Ron Malone's numbers that were given to us, because those were the only numbers that were available. And we went back and started doing our own, because not enough in-depth analysis was going on, and that shouldn't be done by us anyway.
But we don't want to say arrest is recidivism.
So, yes, it's in my report. Those are Ron Malone's numbers, because we didn't have numbers. So we said, what do you guys got? And this is what they gave us. Yeah,
that's what I use. And that's what people looking at this program use to say, boy, those are really good recidivism rates. If people don't go through programming, they say a 60% if you don't go through programming recidivates sometimes.
It's probably a little higher than yours, but I'm not ashamed of that. I expect more of our people. Our people are better than this. They're better than these kind of lifestyle choices to decide to sell drugs, to decide to quit school early, and some of these other maladies that they're, and maybe unfortunately, confronted with. Okay, some of them are born into poverty.
Sure they are.
But nobody made them quit school.
No. Okay?
But
if they get arrested and convicted and then have a chance to go into a program like this and get a GED or get job training, go through drug treatment, and then have a recidivism rate of 14% compared to 60%, that's a success rate. It really is.
Well, the 60
and you should be in favor of people succeeding and not coming back and costing you money to lock them up.
I guess we have a different definition of succeeding.
No, not coming back and having you lock him up. I think both of us think it's succeeding.
We promised Ms. Rose we'd answer her question on the other side. I don't know that we've done that.
She makes a very good point in terms of, you know, depends on what the arrest is for. Like, for instance, she mentioned if you're arrested for not showing up at your probation agent's office, so on and so forth. And, yeah, I agree. I mean, that's a questionable practice. Is there a better way to do that? Sure. But we have to have standards of accountability. These individuals are given a second chance if they're on probation. And to find more excuses. Well, you didn't show up. Oh, because of what? Well, okay, I understand. That's the message they've been getting throughout their entire criminal career, which leads to repeat behavior. I'll give you an example. The electronic monitoring unit, which I'm a big proponent of for certain individuals, low risk, you know, not a public safety risk, as a alternative to incarceration. But there are standards. In other words, they're told up front, here's what you got to do. This, and this. I'm strictly holding people to that. The compliance rate before January 1st, prior to this being put under the office of the sheriff, the compliance rate on electronic monitoring was 78%. Now, you, Joel, would say, hey, that's fantastic.
Sounds pretty good.
I put in some stricter accountability. I formed a absconder unit because there were 430 people prior to January 1st that walked away from electronic monitoring. So we gave them a chance. We all talk about this. People need a second chance. So We said, here, we're not going to lock you up. We're going to put this bracelet on, but here are the rules. There's currently 430 outstanding warrants, and those are escape warrants, for walking away from the program, not missing a date, not walking one block outside the area they're supposed to be in. They never came back at all.
I would expect those people to be arrested.
Since I installed this absconder unit, you know what the compliance rate is now? 98%. 98% of the people that are on electronic monitoring now are adhering to it. Why? Because I sent a different message. You're not going to be able to walk away. You're going to be held strictly to, you know, they're subjected to.
Are you saying people who walked away weren't arrested before?
No, they just put a warrant out and whatever, you know, the police stop them, then I guess they get arrested. We go look for them now. And this year so far, 36 people have walked away. They were arrested within 72 hours because I have formed a unit, which costs money. It's called accountability, and it's sending a different message. The reason why we're getting a 98% compliance rate is because the people on EM know now, hey, if I screw this up, this guy over here, he means what he says, and he's going to come and get
it. And that's a good thing. I mean, if you've given an individual an opportunity to have a more lenient sentence, and you put them on some type of monitoring, and they walk away from that, the monitoring was the leniency, obviously, and they walk away from that, then you should go arrest them. So, okay, that was a little tweak. Now let's tweak some more. I mean, you know, instead of, you know, again, let's define what is the difference between adjusting a program versus elimination of a program. So while I understand what Joel is saying and the justices who are saying we need some programming for this community restoratively, I understand what you're saying when you say this doesn't work, that doesn't work, let's do this, let's do that. But again, we need you to define that of what it is that you're attempting to do.
And you need to recognize success when you see it.
Well, but everybody's not going to agree on the same success. What you agree may be success, Joel, and the judges. And I hear you. I'm not.
And what the judges and the district attorney are taking responsibility for these people. They're up for
election
too.
But also, I mean, if you're going to go after these people that don't comply with the program, then okay,
of course,
Sheriff,
you go after people who don't comply with the program. Well, we go after people who didn't comply with this program.
Well, just to say, hang on. What I hear you saying, Sheriff, is that wasn't happening before.
No,
is that
it wasn't.
What I hear you?
Okay, it was not happening.
Let's go back to the
plain phones. And simple.
John's been waiting for a while. You're on the talk of the town, John. How are you?
Yeah. Good morning, Cassandra, Joel, and welcome back, Sheriff.
Hi, morning, John. How you doing?
I'm calling because I can understand. I've been there, and I can understand the frustrations of the sheriff. In 2003 to about 2005. I was the director, executive director of the Day Reporting Center.
Mm-hmm.
During that period, and we had some of the strict monitoring that I hear the sheriff talking about, 85% of the inmates who successfully completed our program didn't commit a like or similar crime for a year to 18 months, and some of them never. We got them all the way out of the program. How did we do that? Alcohol and other drug abuse, anger management. But here was the key. When I started there, there were no women in the program. When I left, the program was full of them. Why? Because there was discipline. If you say something or touch one of these women, you're going right back to the house. If you come in this program and don't succeed, guess what? When you come back into the system, you are at the tail end of the line. You can't knock some new inmate out who hasn't had his opportunity to fail. And guess what? People get the message. Mm-hmm. They get the message. I mean, you could walk in that place and you would know that they were inmates. And we were working closely with the sheriff's office. You know what happened? We were so successful. I talked to Senator Herb Cole, and I met him at a lunch one day. And he just asked me what I was doing. And I told him. He said, you send me something on that. Send him the records of what we were doing. He got us $100,000 to beef up our training system with new computers and some other stuff that we needed to really embellish the educational component of the program. You know what happened? We never saw that money. And the next year, I was gone. And that program was moved to the south side, where inmates from downtown wouldn't even go. They said, we're not going over there. And so you talk about the backlog and the backup, it started right then. We have some disingenuous people who really want to talk about all these problems that people have in the inner city, but they don't want to succeed at them. They want that to go on. Until you do something about getting them out of there, nothing's going to change. And I'll shut up and listen.
Thank you, John.
Before either of you make a response, we've got to take a break. Inside the pages of the Morning Magazine, 938-799-1290 is the number to call if you want to get in the conversation with Sheriff David Clark as we talk about the Community Justice Resource Center. I got it this time. Inside the pages of the Morning Magazine, right here on 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
Back to the Morning Magazine with Cassandra and Joel McNally. 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
And we're back inside the pages of the Morning Magazine. Time now 9:42. I am Cassandra.
And I'm Joel McNally. We do have Sheriff David Clark in the studio, and he's stayed on a second hour with us, and we appreciate that. Talking about the Community Justice Resource Center, the program, 11-year-old program of alternative treatment, including drug treatment, education, community service, anger management, behavior change. We just had a call from John, one of the previous administrators of the program.
And John indicated that he understood our frustrations, and I understand his. I could see why he did what he did. He didn't quit on us. It's just at some point, you know, you decide that, well, let somebody else try to, you know, do something with this thing. But the thing that John...
Yeah, he ran a very good program.
The thing that John... touched on that I want to point out is there were consequences to behavior. They were clear and they were certain, and also accountability. If you do those two things, you're going to do a lot better than we're doing now. I still think that we can do better. Cassandra, as you mentioned, success is a subjective thing. Like I said, you might call 78% compliance with electronic monitoring success. Well, I took it up to 98. I would call 98 success.
Sure.
I have higher benchmarks than a lot of other people would set. But that's because if you expect more from people and you make it clear that because you know they can do it, they'll reach that goal. They will reach, which is why they did the 98% on their own. This is voluntary compliance because they know sheriff's coming after me if I walk away from this program. Unlike before, you walked away, they'd get an escape warrant, but until you got picked up by the police, you stopped in a traffic stop or a field interview, you weren't going to get arrested. So just that's called accountability and consequences for certain behavior. If you attach consequences to behavior that you don't want, it's less likely to reoccur.
What are your feelings? And this you know, is just kind of a broad question, but the idea of restorative justice, community restorative justice. Do you have some ideas about it? And while the idea has been around for a while, but it's still kind of going through some growing pains right now of getting adjusted and working in communities, not only in Milwaukee, but around the country. Do you have some ideas about the thoughts of restorative justice with a hammer there? I mean, you know, we're going to work with you in this restorative justice program because we know that you could be a person who just got caught up in something and we want you to come back into society, but blow it and we're going to throw the book at you. Okay, so what's your thoughts about the whole attitude of working with community and community residents, judges, and other, you know, district attorneys and leaders to be able to rebuild a community, and not only the community, but the justice system itself, because we know there's a bunch of faults in the justice system where people have gotten some bad raps.
It's not a perfect system. There are people who have gotten some bad raps, but there are many more who put themselves in the predicament that they're in, unfortunately,
sure,
through lifestyle choices.
Sure.
Restorative justice, I mean, you know, every time we turn around, someone's coming up with some new, you know, phrase for it. We're talking about acceptable behavior in a social environment.
Given. I mean,
crime actually is anti-social behavior.
But we know, Chair Clark, we know. Acceptable behavior, period. That's why we got a court system, okay? But when a person makes a mistake, might have even been a choice that they made. At what point do you work with them? Because basically what I hear you saying is the law is the law. There are no exceptions. Break the law and you go to prison. Now, I mean, and I don't get me wrong, I can kind of follow you on some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because I see some stuff myself that if I was the law, there wouldn't be any, you know, just these folks walking around here with their pants hanging down to their knees. I got laws about that. There's rules about that.
See, I wouldn't
that.
Even go that far.
You know, I know it. But see, that's why you're different than I am, too, because I would put them in jail. That HOC would be full out there.
You're accusing me of being the fashion police.
You know, but I would be, okay? And you wouldn't have no room at the House of Correction if I could send these folks out there.
You just got to be willing to spend enough money to lock everybody
that's right,
up.
To walk around with their pants hanging down to their knees. But come on now, at what point do we come together as a community? And you being the sheriff, and we've got Ed Flynn, and we've got, you know, John Chisholm, and the folks down there working hard to resolve a plethora of problems. Not only the overcrowding, but also reentry, also dealing with getting people to just kind of wake up and understand that our tolerances are becoming less for dealing with your stupid choices. But since we're trying to revamp the system all the way around here, we're going to work with you.
Give you
some tools to succeed. Blow it, and we're going to turn you over to David. So now help me understand. Do you have no tolerance for that at all?
Very little, but let me say
okay,
this.
Okay, that's an answer.
About restorative justice, giving people a chance. The key is you have to catch them early, which is why I said earlier, and I'll say it again, and I don't know what to do with this population on the back end, but you have to catch them early. I think we need to take a look at our juvenile justice system, and the reason why we need to start there, not spend any money on the back end, but I think we're spending too much on the back end, and the pipeline, the door is open to all these young people entering into the adult system. You have to catch them early before criminal behavior becomes ingrained human behavior. You have a chance, an easier chance, if you can call it easier.
So you're saying working with the schools and educate them and
better,
that kind of
better
thing.
Parenting, sure. Better parenting, better all
we
that
all,
stuff.
We understand that. But here we are in 2009, and we've got all these issues. Given it's agreeable, we got to educate better, we got to work with NPS, we got to, you know, mm-hmm. we got to do all that.
Mm-hmm.
But we're
all
not,
at one time.
But understandable, but we're not there. And so given the fact that under the circumstances that we have.
And we have these offenders, and what are we going to do with them to change?
Absolutely.
To change
them. All right,
I'll
give you.
Okay.
Let me give you some real life examples. I have some individuals here who are actually in the program. Here's a gentleman. I'll leave the names out. It's not important.
Okay.
38 adult arrests, 24 convictions. Now,
okay.
We can get into whether he was convicted because of whatever. That's not the point. But listen to a couple of early convictions. Robbery as a juvenile. See, that's when we should have started, not arrest number 38, and now we're trying to, you know, we're talking about restorative justice and programming. We should have done something a little more when he was arrested for robbery as a juvenile. And I think that end needs to be...
You don't even have to talk about him to me no more. He's
okay.
been arrested 38.
But he's actually in the program.
Okay.
He's not a good fit.
Given. I'm on your side on that one.
But is anything related to drug abuse in his life? I mean, we can have a lot of crimes related to one problem that has never been dealt with.
A lot of them. And to me, drug possession is, this is to me, and I'm not condoning drug possession. Drug possessions different from drug dealing. You're a drug dealer. No, I have no empathy for you because you're out there destroying neighborhoods. You're destroying other people's lives. You're not just, if it's possession and you're using it, you're destroying your own life. But when you're out there peddling that poison in our neighborhoods to kids and to people who are addicted, no, I have no empathy for
some of those people are addicted to.
Go ahead, only because we're running out of time here, unless the sheriff wants to stay with us on the third hour, which you're welcome to do. You are welcome to do, but 38 times, and there was some drug. Was there drug use or drug peddling?
Drug peddling.
Okay.
Some is drug use, but there's drug peddling.
Okay, so but he needs some help, obviously. Okay, right. Your next
now,
one.
Now we have an individual here who's only been arrested 3 times. He's a good fit for this program because none of them were, you know, they weren't armed robbery.
Sure, all right.
If you're one arrest is because you stuck a gun in somebody's face, I'm not saying lock you up and throw away the key, but you know that's a leap.
That's heavy duty.
And nobody who stuck a gun in somebody's face is in his program.
Okay, so you got a third one?
5 people have been convicted of armed robbery.
But that doesn't mean they stuck a gun in somebody's face.
Oh, okay.
Okay, let's go to the third one. Your third one. I'm just pushing you guys along because we're running.
Well, and we also have some people on the line. That's
absolutely true. So that's why we're going to invite the sheriff to stay over in our third hour.
23 arrests, juvenile convictions. And again, that's where I think we need to go. Burglary is a juvenile. We should have started then, not waited until his 23rd arrest. Here's one here. 2 adult arrests, but one of them is robbery. You know, you got to.
See, but you don't have any of the circumstances. We don't know, just from a label, robbery. We don't know what that was.
You don't know what robbery is?
I know what a robbery is, but I don't know what that case was. And you have to look at each case on a case-by-case basis. That's what a judge has to do when he decides what the punishment should be.
On a case-by-case basis.
No, but you just use a label.
I'm reading actual people here.
And like I said, we used a label before of armed robbery, but somehow the person had less than a year in the House of Correction as a sentence.
You want to find some external reason that this guy got jammed up.
I'm not trying to find anything.
You know, it's
Hold your thought, Sheriff. Hold your thought. We've got Alex, Eddie, Clara, and Maurice on the phone lines with you. So I got to ask you right now, can you hang on the other side?
Silence is definitely
and it's not appropriate on the
air. You know what? For a couple of callers, yes, I will do that.
I've got 4 that's been holding for the last 45 minutes.
We can quickly get through those 4. I will stick around.
All right, we'll do that.
That's all we're promising.
Inside the pages of the Morning Magazine. We'll be back after this from 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. And we're back inside the pages of the Morning Magazine. Time now is 10:03. I'm Cassandra.
And I'm Joel McNally. We've been having a conversation with Sheriff David Clark about the Community Justice Resource Center. And there are a number of callers on the line. We want to get them an opportunity to get in with the sheriff. We have kept him over. We're moving into our third hour now, and we appreciate you staying.
Absolutely.
You staying extra time. It'll never
be said that I cut and run, because I don't.
Well, you know, you're always good about coming and spending time with us and answering questions. Difficult. You know, usually when you come, it's always we got to talk about the hard stuff. And so we do. We give you a lot of credit, and we appreciate a lot that you're willing to come and sit down with us and talk about the difficult stuff in the first place, because there's some more folks that we need to talk about some difficult stuff, and they won't come.
But that's what I like about coming on here with you guys, is because you can't avoid the difficult stuff. You're right. Everybody wants to tiptoe around the edges, and you don't make progress, and you can't make a difference doing that.
Talk about cutting and running. We got to continue this conversation for a minute. We are talking about the Community Justice Resource Center and the program. And you said that you not out to kill the program. You want to reform the program some, change some of the standards some way. But if you can't change everything you want about it, then does that change your attitude about whether the program should exist?
Yes, it does, because, like I said, I'm not for pouring good money after bad, and I'm not for status quo. I never have been. I wasn't brought in to be a caretaker of this situation. This thing was a mess, and one of the reasons why the executive and then the county board approved, they needed this thing straightened out. Well, in order to straighten it out, it needed change.
And you're talking about the whole House of Correction operation in general. But this program itself, now, while you and I have some differences about it, I don't think that you can look at this program and say that it's a failure. You may not approve of everyone who's in the program, but don't you think job training and drug treatment and some of the people that are getting it through this program deserve to have a program like this, and that is one of the functions of running a good correction system, is to give some people who can succeed the possibility of education, the possibility of drug treatment. And while you and I may differ on the recidivism rate, and you find a way to make it look worse than I make it, the truth of the matter is a whole lot of people are succeeding. And if this program didn't exist, that option wouldn't be there.
Well, you know, and this is where, you know, you and I have a difference of opinion. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, you said, do you think it's a failure? Well, no, it's not a total failure, but I want better. I want to improve this thing. It can't get better without change. If it stays the same, you may think it's okay, but then it's not going to get better. So what
a
I
lot
try
of people
to do,
are what are I try going was, through it well now.
Well, show me the data to suggest that, and I'll take a look at it.
Yeah.
I'm open to any data, and that's part of the problem I have. If you notice my 6 points, one of them is we need to do a better job of collecting and analyzing data. Not cops, not me doing it, but, you know, some legitimate research arm that maybe will, you know, maybe the public policy forum or something like that, that would look at this thing and make objective assessments, and then we could argue about, you know, their findings. But I want to get it better. I want to make it better. I want more people to succeed. You may think it's doing great. Well, I still think it can do better. And my recommendations for it are to approach just that. My standards and the bar, I've always had the bar set high. People will reach it. You'd be surprised. Like I point out, the electronic monitoring, 78%, a lot of people would say, man, that's fantastic.
If you can have even more people succeeding through this program, boy, would anybody, any supporter of the program would be happy with that.
Yeah, but I think you got to do a better job of screening who actually is a good fit, not are they deserving. It doesn't matter whether I think they deserve it or not. If they're not a good fit, what you're doing is you're setting people up to fail. I don't want to set anybody up to fail.
What about the people who succeeded? And let's not talk about the failures. What about the people who succeeded? Why wouldn't
what do we call this program to continue for those people? What do we call success?
Through the program and being drug-free and not reoffending, and there are all kinds of ways to say that.
Well, see, nobody's monitoring it. Show me those people.
Help me understand, and then we'll definitely go to the phones and keep our commitment to you, Sheriff, to go through the callers. Help me understand. Is there a medium here where both sides can come together and come to some agreement? You're backing away from the microphone there. Is there a place?
Adjusting my position.
Okay, all right. Is there a medium, maybe not necessarily a happy one, but is there a way that both sides can come together and maybe put some monitoring in like you're talking about, but not necessarily eliminating the program? Can there be a resolve?
I don't know.
Are you willing to sit down at the table with the other side and work toward a resolve?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm not willing to sit down and keep it the way it is. Okay. I'll say it right up front.
You've obviously got a plan that you think would work. Now, you know, I got issues with that privatization one, but actually, there's someone on the phone line that we want to bring in that may want to talk about that privatization a little bit, and let's hear what he has to say. But I think I've heard you say that you are willing to sit down to the table with both sides and debate this some more and maybe come to some happy medium without totally eliminating the program.
Well, you're right. The fact that I brought up the need for reform in this program, I think, is evidence that I'm willing to sit down and have this discussion, because you can't have it with yourself, and that's why I brought it to the public.
Let me ask you this,
Specter.
Is there a point maybe when maybe we could do another one of these sessions and bring you back and someone back from the program and bring you together here on air? Is that a possibility?
Why not?
Think that's a possibility?
That's good.
Why don't we work that out, and maybe we can come to some type of a medium, you know, and get the community involved here, and let's see if we can get a fit here that works for everybody.
I think the one thing that we all can agree with, I believe, is somebody's got to show me the money.
Okay.
As Cuba Gooding Jr. so eloquently
said,
show me the money.
We all need some economic stimulus.
The funding mechanism is huge, because we're not going to be able to continue to do this on the property tax levy because of the county situation. And every year, one of the reasons why I have to look at this, as you know, Cassandra, is budgets are shrinking.
Absolutely.
And they're saying, Sheriff, you're not getting all this money that you got last year. And I understand all that.
As a homeowner?
So I have to look at everything critically.
As a homeowner, I want you to look at it real critical, okay? Sure. You and everybody else that's involved with the tax levy. We want you to do that, okay? And we want you to be accountable for what you are charged with. And if it ain't working, bring it out. That's what you're supposed to be able to do. But, you know, we got to get to some kind of happy medium so that, you know, both sides are not bickering back and forth. And let's face it, these people that are getting in trouble, they need some economic stimulus too. They do. They need to, mind you, given, I don't necessarily agree with just babysitting and pacifying these folks that are wanting to continue to break the law 38 times over and over again. But we do have to look at what is the problem. And if we can, you know, maybe this you know, whatever the situation, sometimes there are excruciating circumstances where people need some help. And I think that you're willing to put help out there.
Darn right I am.
There's nothing wrong with having a big stick with the help.
Somebody helped me.
Okay.
You're darn right I am.
Somebody helped us all. And I think there's nothing wrong with having some help with some guidelines that go along with the help, strict guidelines that say, we're going to help you. We're going to be compassionate. But at the same time, do this. Don't blow it. Outside of death, we're not dealing with any more excuses out of you. And that's just it. I mean, does that work?
That's precisely what I'm saying.
Let's go to the phone lines. Alex, thank you very much for waiting. You're on the Talk of the Town. How are you?
Hey, good. Thanks a lot, Cassandra and Joel and hey. Sheriff Clark. Some of you know I work with Common Council President Willie Hines. I was actually at a community meeting at Metcalf Park this morning, but made it back to City Hall just now. And I just want to just mention the privatization part, because I think this is a battle that the sheriff and President Hines often fight in similar ways, and privatization doesn't have to be a pariah. That word can mean many different things. For example, right now the county has a partnership with Genesis Behavioral Services for services that the county, and we're on the advisory board for that along with Supervisor Coggs, for services that the county cannot do, they don't have the expertise for it, and they would charge way too much money. So sometimes privatization, Justice 2000 has a partnership with the municipal court system, which is a privatization partnership. So when the sheriff talks about nonprofits coming into the fold, doing things cheaper, more effectively, more humanely, more passionately, and with greater expertise, I just think we need to consider those things, because I'll tell you, Genesis Behavioral Services, they train men who have been incarcerated. They work with the sheriff's department. They work with the county. They do a program with the Common Council where we have something called the councilman's clothes rack, where aldermen donate old suits and help them to get job interviews. And they do things much better than the government could do at a cheaper price. So sometimes we need to consider those things.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
All right. Eddie, thanks for waiting. You're on the Talk of the Town. How are you?
Yeah, a couple questions. One, the information that Joe was reading off earlier that came from the Sheriff's Department, how would that information get out without your approval, Sheriff Clark?
I don't know what you mean, how it would get out my approval.
Well, I thought any information going on with numbers, statistics, or anything like that, shouldn't it come across your desk?
Those were the numbers.
Like that,
okay, here's how this report's put together. We put forth a quarterly report for the county board on the progress being made at the correctional facility south down in Franklin, more commonly known as the House Correction. There is no data available. So we went to the previous or prior administration under Ron Malone and said, what do you guys have on recidivism? Those are the numbers that they had. Those are the numbers that we put out. We didn't.
But okay,
we don't
so
collect.
You approve those numbers then. If you let them put them out there, why not put no information out rather than put out anything that you're not going to agree with?
I don't think I understand your question.
Well, okay, the information that Joel read, he said these are numbers he's getting that show a reflection of a results of a program that's being ran by your department, right?
Right.
Okay, if those numbers are not
3 months in.
Pardon?
3 months in. We
don't
have.
I know. But what I'm saying, if you don't have adequate information, or whatever, why publish that?
Because those are the numbers they have at the time. Those are the numbers that they are supposed to keep. Those are the numbers based on the data that they accumulate in terms of reducing recidivism, which is one of the requirements of this program. So we're left to published the numbers that they, you know, we went and said, what do you have on any issue of recidivism? We have these numbers.
I understand that, but if you don't agree with them, couldn't you just say it? We have data, but I don't agree with that data and update it or something.
How could I not agree with it?
Told Joel that you don't, that was in your report, those numbers. You don't agree with that. That's not your information. I mean, anything that would cause some sort of conflict, why would I put it out there?
There was nothing to conflict with it at the time. After this report was published and I realized that we weren't collecting data in the fashion it should be collected in order to make some assessments, we started crunching numbers. This was after the report and found out that the numbers are different than the numbers that we were given by Jan Brilo. So there were no numbers to conflict with at the time. So at the time when they said the recidivism number is this, I couldn't say, well, I don't believe that. I didn't have anything to conflict it with because we don't crunch the numbers.
Okay.
That's part of the problem that I'm having, and part of my six steps that I put forth to reform this thing is a better collection of data and a better analysis of the data. So when they tell me this, I had nothing to go with to not believe them.
Okay, another thing I wanted to talk about. It seemed like you paint a pretty broad brush. Paint a pretty broad brush on crime issues, that you have a no tolerance, zero tolerance for anything. Sometimes there are circumstances that come up that a person put themselves in, he or she, that for whatever reason. And it seems like your position is more so with the masses of a certain population that feel like this would never happen to them. And I'm just asking you this. Are you planting seeds for maybe the future to run as a mayor?
No. But what? Give me some examples of
I have conversations with people that don't understand the inner city, and they just look at it in one eye and one eye only and forget the circumstances. And I know that you don't have time to babysit this, that, and other, but from what I'm hearing, what Joel is saying and Cassandra is saying, we're talking about people that probably doesn't have the means or the vehicle or comes from a dysfunctional family that surviving in the best way they can, and maybe there is an opportunity for them to take advantage of a situation that
like
changes
what, selling
life.
Dope?
If you change one person's life, it's a positive, you know.
Like selling dope? Well,
I'm not selling dope. But even if the person first time, is it a career dope dealer or a one time dope dealer? You know, if it's a one time, you got a chance
career.
To turn that person around. Then that's different from a person that's career. And I understand your point. It's some people that just, you know, might as well throw them a ball and chain and let them off in Lake Michigan somewhere. But maybe that first-time person, that young person that's just 18, 19 years old, why should they be given the opportunity to change?
That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about 18, 19-year-olds who have been arrested one, two, or even three times. Okay, we're talking about career criminals. Some of the numbers I went through earlier, a guy arrested 38 times, 26 times, 24 times.
Yeah, I can understand that.
That's not an 18-year-old one, two, or three times. So we're talking about, and that's one of the things we need to do, and I think is evidence that I'm not painting with a broad stroke. We need to separate, you know, the populations out to say who are the career criminals versus who are the ones that, you know, are, you know, we can probably, with some support structure in place and some services, we can probably turn this person around. But right now we have a system that it's a one-size-fits-all. We think we can throw everybody in there and then everybody will succeed.
No, that's not what the judges are doing. The judges have selected these people saying, we think you can succeed in this program. They aren't giving this to everybody. There are only 110 or 120
the
slots.
The program is written up. Okay, this is not my opinion. The program is written up for non-violent, non-assaultive offenders. An armed robber, and there's not just one in there, is not a nonviolent offender.
There are three,
this thing
I think.
Is starting to grow.
But if it's an armed robbery conviction and they're at the House of Correction, there are circumstances different that make this different than most armed robbers who are in prison.
Let me ask
I'm
going
to have to take a break, so
on.
Now I'm going to ask you again.
Let me ask the caller if he's still on.
No, he's not.
I was going to ask him, what crime does he tolerate? I don't tolerate any criminal activity for any reason because, as I've said, you may be in some difficult straits in a difficult situation, but criminal behavior is not an appropriate response for that. And I will always say, and you're right, I do have a zero tolerance for crime, and I'm not ashamed of that, and nor will I ever back off of that.
There's nothing wrong with that. Clara, you're on the talk of the town. How are you?
Good morning to each and everyone.
Good morning, ma'am.
You know, I'm going to begin by saying it's been frightening listening to Sheriff Clark for these 2 hours or so, and I'll tell you why. There appears to be only one standard of judgment, and that is Sheriff Clark's judgment. His superior judgment that supersedes that of the judges in the courts and all others, to the extent that he ignores the court decisions.
Show me what court decision I've ignored, ma'am.
Let me finish, please. The presentation that I've been listening to is glib, almost to the point of callous disregard for the welfare of people, especially those who are most vulnerable under your authority. I heard you say you're a cop. And
through and through.
From what you have said thereafter, dimensions of compassion don't apply to you. And the harder Joel and Cassandra probe, the less humane your responses become. Hence, privatization. What I hear are almost shades of Idi Amin and the former chief of police that we have. And it is frightening.
What former chief of police, man?
I believe you'd be talking about Harold Breyer, but that would be my guess.
Let's go back to the phone. Did you have a response to Clara, Sheriff?
You know, yeah, everybody's entitled to their opinion, and I realize that you know, everybody is not going to agree with my position on things. You know, I'm in a responsibility. I'm in a role here to protect the public, and yeah, I am hard on. Yes, I am hard on career criminals and those that would prey on the weak, those that would intimidate, those that would take over neighborhoods, peddling poison, holding up stores, drive-by shootings, gang members. Yes, you're darn right I am. And like I said, I'm not backing off of that. And I'm not ashamed of it either.
Our phone lines are absolutely full, Sheriff. We really don't have much more time, so you might as well just go on and stay and finish out the show with us. You know, I promise I'll be back real quick.
I really can't, but there was one more caller that was in that first wave that I would like to give a chance
to. Let's do that. Maurice, you're on the talk of the town. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Cassandra Joel and Sheriff Clark.
Good morning, sir.
About recidivism, I mean, in order for us to reduce recidivism, I believe, as Joel and Sandra stated, we do need the community to be a part of this, because the people that are coming out of these the jail system, they are the people from our community, and you have it has to be some programs. I don't, whatever you want to label it anyway, there has to be a mechanism for them to be reintegrated back into our community, even if they did commit certain crimes. I mean, those who committed violent crimes, I understand we do need laws and rules, and you know, for us to be a community, but and like I as Joe stated, I mean, we need to have these programs. Even if the success rate is 50%, that's 50% of those people who are coming out that have some type of way that they can get back into this community through a program that can help them, because in a lot of cases there is no other way for these people to be reintegrated in the community, because they don't have family or friends, and maybe that's probably part of the reason why they went into the penal institutions and whatnot, because they don't have programs that could help them. The recidivism rate probably does increase, because if you just let someone out and they don't have any means, I mean, you even while they're in there, if they don't have programs even while they're in the penal institution for them to correct themselves, because I even hear early, you know, taking these programs away, like getting your GED and computer skills and stuff, you take away this stuff away from them while they're in prison or the county jail, be wherever institution they're in, and just release them on the streets, and then there's no programs on the back end, what the only result from that is going to be a higher recidivism rate.
We got to go. I've got to take a break. Stand by. Inside the pages of the Morning Magazine. We'll be right back after this.
Back to the Morning Magazine with Cassandra and Joel McNally. 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
And we're back inside the pages of the Morning Magazine. Time now, 10:27. I'm Cassandra.
And I'm Joel McNally.
And I have to tell you, I cut that commercial break short, Sheriff, so that we could try to keep our commitment. And you know, because I want to keep you coming back, and I want to keep you where we can have these good, wholesome dialogues like this for the community, and you don't feel like you got to cut and run when you come in here. So we're not going to take any more callers. We appreciate you staying, and we want to give you an opportunity to kind of wrap up and put some final thoughts out there.
Well, I don't know. You got one more call. You want to let that person...
Sure. See, that's what I like about you, Sheriff. Fair. That's no problem. Muhammad, I'm going to retract my statement that I told you. The Sheriff does have time to talk to you. Good morning. You're on the Talk of the Town. How are you?
How's everybody there?
Well, wonderful. Thank you.
All right. You know, my statement is I agree wholeheartedly with Sheriff Clark, and this is coming from somebody who is one of the people, who were one of the people who Sheriff Clark was talking about. At one time, I might have been considered a career criminal, but I addressed my criminality. And the thing is, in the state prison system, you know, you ever heard the term state raised? If you really dissect that term, you know, you have guys that go in, they keep going and keep coming back, because in the prison system, they don't do anything. You got guys in there that can't even read and write, and then they put them back out on the street with nothing else to do but go back to wherever they, whatever they came from.
Let me ask you a question, Muhammad. Muhammad.
Pardon me?
Let me ask you a question. Now, I actually happened to meet Muhammad some time ago, and you were still on paper when I met you.
Right.
How long ago has that been? It's been probably 4 or 5 years since you and I met. Is that correct?
Right. And I've been working the same job for the last 10 years. And you're right.
And when I met you, I don't know if I had just gone to talk radio, but you were striving to get your life together after incarceration. Is that correct?
That's right.
And you want to talk a little bit about how long you were incarcerated?
Well, I was incarcerated a number of years.
Okay.
I was
repeat offender
years altogether.
Were you a repeat offender?
I repeated I repeated once, and then I got a violation once, and on the last violation, that's when I decided to address my criminality.
Gotcha. And so what you're saying is that do I hear you saying that there shouldn't be any programs out there for people?
No, I'm not saying
okay.
that.
Okay, great.
We need the programs, but what Sheriff Clark is saying is this. We need to put a lot of resources towards those kids and stopping them at an early age. And you can do that through the MPS. When you see kids that aren't going to school, there's something wrong in that household. And somebody should be there to check on that household and then check on the kids and try to get those kids into some type of program and get them off the street. Because a lot of times, you know, you might have just a mother in the household, or you might have a household where there's two parents, but both of them might be drug addicts and they don't care what's going on. Now, I didn't come from that type of background.
Okay.
You know, I chose to do what I did. It was consciously. And the thing is, once you let the kids just keep going and doing what they're doing, you know, and the state keeps getting them and keep getting them, because they don't care. A lot of them, they really just want them back and forth anyway, because it pays the bills for all those farmers up north. That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
And saying of it is, when they do come out, we need places, yeah, like the day reporting center. But they need to go, it needs to be more stronger than what it is. They need to have kind of the thinking programs for these guys. And so they can recognize red flag thoughts. This is what happened with me. I took a program because I was on federal paper and state paper at the same time. My federal PO made me come to a kind of the thinking program. That's what changed. That's when I looked at that and saw my behavior, what I was doing, and that's what changed me and helped me get through these. Man, it's been like almost 15 years since I've been out of jail. I haven't had any trouble. Not like I've been working the same job for 10.
Great. Congratulations.
Muhammad, first of all, First of all,
don't congratulate. It's just something that I need to do for myself.
Right.
Right. And,
understand what I'm saying?
That's what I want to speak to. You know, only the sheer will of the individual to get themselves out of these predicaments.
That's right.
You know, and they do need support structures. I've said that more than half a dozen times. People do need help. They do need services. But at some point, you know, we got to realize that, like I said, it's the front end, like Muhammad's saying. That's where we're really falling short. And all this focus is being done on the back end when this has become ingrained human behavior and very difficult to reverse. So, and then there was a woman called in several callers ago to talk about how heartless I was when I talked about the need to focus our effort and energy on young people. That doesn't sound heartless to me, but, you know, hang in there, man. I'll tell you what, I could use you as a mentor. I think we need a mentoring program along with this. That's another bullet point I'll put down that we can, you know, improve and make this community justice resource system better. I'll say it one more time before I leave. I have never advocated for scrapping it. I think it needs reform. I think it needs real change. Cassandra, you know, she wants to know if tweaking will do it. I don't know, maybe, but...
that's what will do it. We need to tweak that program and make it more harder than easy because...
There you go.
From where people go there, they, you know, okay, you sit them down, you know, you talk to them and different stuff, but that's, you know, and then you try to get them to learn some computer skills and all that, but that's not getting them money and that's not dealing, helping them deal with their criminality.
It means
right.
that some...
And he talked about the cognitive...
start dealing with their criminality where they can see themselves, hey, this is bad behavior, these are bad choices.
Thank you, Muhammad.
He said he touched on the cognitive thinking, you know, programs like that, cognitive thinking, decision making. Everybody wants to hang this around, you know, job training as if jobs during this economy are raining down from the sky. They're just not there, especially for unskilled workers and people walking around with a GED and just a high school education. What I would say is you're going to have to go back and get some more education. Yeah, it's going to be tough, but the alternative is not, you know, to involve yourself in more criminality because you can't find a job.
Agreed. That's totally agreed. But at what point do the talking heads, you know, program directors, judges, district attorneys, sheriffs, sit down at the table and tweak it, get it done?
In August, actually, this month.
Is that when it's going to
happen? This is going to come up at budget time. This program is always up for review, and I'm going to put forth my ideas. Other people should come forth
sure.
and put them. But I'll tell you right now, the status quo and the way that it's being done now isn't acceptable to
well,
me.
That's,
but
that's understandable.
That's
but
my,
I mean,
my
you know,
position.
this battle to me sounds kind of like healthcare reform.
Oh, don't say that.
You know, and mind you, there's some people that have been working this program for a considerable amount of time that feel that they have some success with it. And what I hear you saying is that, hold on, it isn't maybe as successful as maybe the folks think it is, and that you think that there ought to be some adjustments. So let's make some adjustments, and let's come to a happy medium, and make the taxpayers happy in the process, if that's all possible.
That's the ideal, and
okay.
That's what we'll work toward. But, Mohammed, if you could, give my office a call, because I do want to start a mentoring program, people who have gone through, and real-life people.
Now, wait a minute. You're not going to be the private owner of this, are you? You're not talking about buying this program yourself, are you?
The mentoring program?
Whatever program. You're going to start your own program? Is that what I hear you saying, that
Why
you're
going
to start your own program?
Why not?
I mean, I'm not against it.
Oh, okay.
But you're not moving one program out of the way so you can slide a new one in, is it?
No, it's going to be a component of it.
Oh, okay. That's good ideas. I mean, you know, I mean, why couldn't we have this conversation? Why did it take us 3 hours to get to that?
A component of the current to make this thing better.
That doesn't
it's
sound like
something that's missing.
You know what? You'd be a good role model for something like that. African-American, successful... You know, law enforcement agent working with our African American and young men of color from these communities where they've had some problems, you'd be a good proponent for that. So, I mean, it sounds like a great idea, but why did it take us 3 hours for you to tell us that that's what you were going to do?
Because you said you had 3 hours to fill, and I had to have something to say for 3 hours, so I figured I had to stretch it out.
Tell you what, we've got Regina and Johnson on the phone. They really want to talk to you, Sheriff, and I really need to take a break. It's 10:37. I got to take this break. So tell you what, I'll let you answer on the other side, inside the pages of the Morning Magazine after this on 1290 WMCS. Talk of the
day. Being hostage.
This is Reverend Al Sharpton.
Celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. Back to the Morning Magazine with Cassandra Cassandra and Joel McNally. 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
We're back inside the pages of the Morning Magazine. Time now, 10:44. I am Cassandra Cassandra.
And I'm Joel McNally.
We're going to go right to the phones and let Johnson and Regina in this conversation as we prepare to wrap up with Sheriff David Clark talking about the Community Justice Resource Center in Milwaukee, formerly known as the Day Reporting Center. Let's say good morning to Regina. Thanks for waiting. You're on the Talk of the Town. How are you?
Good morning, Joel. Good morning, Cassandra. I think you guys are doing a fabulous job.
Thank you.
I want this, Joel, kudos to you. I love you.
Thank you.
Sheriff Clark, the question that I have for you, and how can I say this? It, based on what I've been hearing in the news and what I see on TV, and you are an African-American male, it seems like the programs, it seems like you're, to my opinion, and maybe I'm wrong, but you're knocking the African-American community down instead of building us up. And being that you are an African-American male, I know it's your job to protect the victim. I know that. I understand that. I respect that. But you see that our jails are crowded with African-American men and women. Why are you, it seems like instead of you trying to build us up, you're knocking us down. That's just my opinion.
Thank you, Regina. Okay. Thank you. And Sheriff, before you answer that question, let's take our final caller so we can kind of wrap this up. Johnson, you're on the Talk of the Town. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Joel and Sheriff Clark, Regina, I don't know why she's I'm a black male myself. I agree with Sheriff Clark. One of the reasons why these prisons are so full of our black males is because people have not come down and did the things that you're talking about doing. Everybody let this stuff go into it, get to a point where they find themselves as being repeated. The criminals, like you said, on the front end, if we stop a lot of this stuff on the front end, which started in our elementary schools and go and right on through high school, then you wouldn't see that. I don't see him being that kind of person. I'm not a big fan of David Clark, either, of Sheriff Clark, but I wholeheartedly agree with him on these issues he's been talking about. He talked about repeated criminals who he mentioned something about somebody 38 times been arrested. There's something could have been done to keep these people from being arrested 38 times, because I know where he's going to end up. That's a career criminal by heart. Now, the other thing you talked about, the recidivism rate. I've been to every institution in this city, in Milwaukee, in this county, I've been to it. The recidivism rate is very, very high. That's male and female. And again, Sheriff Clark, I applaud you. This has to be done on the front end, not on the back end. Start early. Your mentoring program that you just talked about, I applaud that. That's a good thing to start. I know Joel been on the opposite side of this thing with you. He's been kind of cracking you down on everything you try to talk about. I think he's a little bit too close to it with kids involvement. but he has to listen to what you were saying. I know you guys have been talking over each other all along. Cassandra's been trying to keep this thing going, and she's done a good job of it. But Sheriff Clark, keep doing what you're going. You say you're a cop first. I like that idea. You haven't backed down on this. I've been listening to you for a long time on the radio and off. I wish we had more people out there like that. And for Regina, again, I don't know what you're doing on your end, Regina. But I don't know if you have any little boys around your house, but look at the people in your neighborhood. This is what David Clark is talking about. Stop it on the front end when those kids are growing up, and then we won't have all these people in these. Because you're right, it's full of them.
Thank you, Johnson.
Black males, and I'm one, so I'm very sensitive to this issue. But keep going. I know you're running out of time, and I'm just going to bring it to a close. But keep doing what you're doing, Clark.
Thank you.
I like what you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
Just let me add to what Regina said. The program we're talking about, this year from January 1 to June 8, 2009, the program has served 132 black people, 39 white, and 5 Latino. So that is the program we're talking about that's being threatened here. It's one that a whole